Coming to you from the Flex Fox Fantasies Satellite Broadcast Studio in Holland Landing, Ontario, this is the weekly show. I am your spill-in host this week, WizKid Jeremiah Johnson, and I'm here to talk to all of you about Week 10 matchups. We are now halfway through the season, so I think we can glean a sufficient amount of data from a lot of this, and I'm going to overreact to just about everything this week. Have you ever poured one out for your dead homies? You ever had a friend say they were going to come over and then stand you up? Well, that's how I feel tonight. We're going to do both of those things. First off, we're going to pour one out for Mr. Ryan Neeson. Happy birthday to you, sir. Happy 28th birthday. It's all downhill at 30, so you really better enjoy these 2 years because your life's over at this point. And let's also wish Garth Newton and his family continued safety as they huddle somewhere in the bowels of their home in Waterloo with a tornado warning. So, unfortunately, Garth will not be able to join me this evening. With that being said, I'm not going to discuss the trade that went down between myself and RKR, and I will not be discussing the power rankings that were released just before the show. I figure you're all going to be hearing my voice quite a lot over the next hour or so. We probably don't want to add to it. We don't want to add to that pain and suffering, that's for sure. With that being said, let's get right into it. And I'm going to be selfish here. I'm going to start with my own matchup in Week 10 because Week 10 was interesting in a good way. And so my matchup, I defeated Ben 223 points to 208.2 points. And the leading scorers for each of our teams in descending order, Gunnar Henderson, Andrew Abbott, and Luis Robert for myself, Jack Sawinski, Alexis Diaz, and Cabrian Hayes, freshly picked up off the waiver wire for Ben. And my thoughts with this matchup are that Ben's season is probably over at this point. Over from a championship aspirational perspective. On Slack, he even acknowledged that he was in a maintenance year, the typical cop-out for Kaminsky-esque teams that have high championship expectations and just flop like a flaccid wiener on the ground. And so that's really what Ben's doing here. 208 points, that's fine. But Ben's 4-6 at this point. I think we all know what he is, right? When Jack Sawinski and Cabrian Hayes are two of your three top scoring players, I mean, that's going to be tough. No Goldschmidt, no Kyle Tucker, no Sandy Alcantara, none of those guys in the top three. And from my perspective, I mean, I saw firsthand what Ben's team is currently doing. And let me tell you, it's not much. And it's a problem. Ben's stars are not playing like stars. And it's as simple as that. I get some of them are older. Paul Goldschmidt, I'm looking at you. Xander Bogaerts, I'm looking at you. And I get some of them are hurt. Jazz Chisholm, Max Fried, back at you. But you would think that Ben, especially coming off when we had divisions, being a divisional champion, would have the depth to withstand this. And it turns out he just doesn't. So Ben is looking more like a Europa team and less like a championship team by the week. And for me, I mean, I keep flip-flopping between Europa and the Vase. And I personally would love a Vase with Flex's face on it. I mean, who wouldn't? You know, like next time I want to get my fiance flowers, put them in the Flex face. Right? Like just, here you go, honey. Turn around. Flex his face. What more could you want? And so Ben, is in reality, is just ruining my dreams by keeping me away from my destiny winning the Vase and every title in this league. But enough about me. Let's move on to the next matchup. And I want to say it's a shocker, but it's not. And that is Chris's Mummy's Good Boys, the now 8th-ranked team, dispatched of Nick and the Man, 257.7 to 249.8. And of course, I look at the matchup and I see none other than Freddie Freeman leading all scorers. And that is not shocking at all. Freddie Freeman is a beast. And Chris is the living embodiment of one player can carry your fantasy team, because Freddie Freeman is basically doing just that, carrying his fantasy team week in and week out, making sure that he gets W's. And the thing is, like, do I have to give Chris respect at this point? I mean, 257 points, that is a respectable total. I will not deny that. I won't. And he's currently in the playoff spot, which is also halfway through the season, frankly, shocking to me, looking at the state of his roster. However, he's 6-4. And 6-4 is not 8-2. It's not even 7-3. And of course, you're sitting there going, well, yeah. But 6-4 is, he's eighth. A loss and he's in the Europa. Right? So could Chris go 4-6? Well, I guess 4-5 the rest of the way. Could he go 3-6? Yeah. His team's not very good. I mean, I'm not bound, as I've said, the way Aiden is bound to saying nice things about Chris. I mean, Chris has a star on his team in Freddie Freeman. Kyle Hendricks putting up 25 points. I mean, did you watch his start? Because I caught a glimpse of it. He went 8 innings. He no-hit the Giants for a large portion of that game, but he strikes no one out. He throws 87. I mean, he's a Zach Greinke, except he's like 33 instead of 38. He's missing the grunt. So, I mean, I don't know if Chris can continue to count on guys like Kyle Hendricks and Luke Rayleigh every week, and yet, if it's not those guys, it's somebody else. So maybe Chris is for real, but I'm not willing to buy into it yet. And we've all been very, I've been very transparent with all of you about where I stand with Nick. 249.8 points is a surprisingly high point total for Nick. Josh Naylor, 27.6 points. That's nice. But it's not enough. And I look at Francisco Lindor, put up 18.4 points, and I think about that trade between him, Aiden, and myself. And I want to look at that for a second, right? So Nick got Francisco Lindor, and he gave up some prospects and some picks. I got Elly De La Cruz and Dalton Varsho, who was later flipped for Loris Robert. And Aiden got Kevin Gausman, who, for those checking in at home, is the number one ranked pitcher in fantasy so far in terms of total points. Elly's looking pretty good. Kevin Gausman could win the Cy Young. What the hell is Francisco Lindor doing? I bet you the Mets regret that contract a lot. A lot, a lot. And I have a feeling Nick might regret this trade too, because that trade to me at the time, at least when I was negotiating it with him, seemed like he thought he was going to be a contender. And I hate to break it to him, but 2-8 is not a contender. Being 19th in the league is not a contender. Losing in the first round of the A's will not make you a contender. And that's where Nick's at. Matt McClain's really interesting, though. And as you'll see in the power rankings, I'm pretty high on Matt McClain alone to buoy a system. So that's exciting. But then it's like, is Lindor not redundant? I don't know. I guess he could run a shortstop at the utility position or the alt position. But yeah, I mean, other than that, I don't know where Nick's going. This was probably his 95th percentile outcome, and he still lost. So that's depressing. But let's move on to something a little bit less depressing, shall we? I mean, I'm happy for this guy, this next participant, and that is Jeffrey Chow. He's up to 5-5. He's 10th. He won his matchup this week, 282.5 to 172.7 over Flex. I'm going to start with Flex here because I think what Flex has going on is actually really interesting. So Corbin Carroll, 49.4 points. I mean, let's give the man his flowers, shall we? I mean, he is the odds-on favorite for Rookie of the Year. If you have some loose change laying around and you're a gambler, go put some money on Corbin Carroll to win Rookie of the Year. It's probably free money at this point. I don't know what the odds are. It's probably, minus 200, but you know what? It's some free money. So go do that. Because the guy is not only a Rookie of the Year, but Corbin Carroll might be a legitimate MVP candidate. And if we were drafting this league from scratch tomorrow, he would go in the first 15 picks, which is got to be something Flex is just absolutely thrilled about because the other spots on his roster are a bit disappointing. Spencer Steer, another great pickup for Flex, his second scorer, 21 points. plays first. He plays, I think, his third base eligibility as well. That's pretty handy. But at the same time, like, these two excellent fantasy players are just filling a hole that is created by failures like Riley Green and Ezekiel Tovar, the traded Tommy Edman. I mean, these guys are filling those gaps. And so I think with Flex, he's still just treading water. Because 172 points probably isn't going to win you many matchups. He's 16th, he's 3-7, he's on the cusp, like myself, of the Vaze and Europa. And I haven't seen anything from Flex this year that says he can put up 250 one week and bite some team in Europa in round one. I don't see it. So he better hope he sticks to the Vaze, because if he gets in Europa, he's going to get his ass kicked in round one. Because when I look at it, I see Corbin Carroll, I see Spencer Steer. Michael Harris is coming around, but he's been really bad. And I see Logan Webb and Logan Gilbert and not much else. So that could win the Vaze, but I don't think it's going to go far in Europa. So I hope, and I think he has to hope, that he sticks in the Vaze. And now to the star of the show, Jeffrey Chow. 282.5 points. He's back, man. I mean, we all roasted him for that trade with Ryan. But you know what? When Jeffrey is going right, this is what it's going to look like. Jose Ramirez, 40.5 points. Shane McClanahan, 31.5 points. Eat your heart out. All the people who thought maybe this trade was bad for Chow because McClanahan came through for him this week, and Aaron Nola. So that's how Chow's going to get it done. He's going to get it done with Jose Ramirez and Aaron Judge absolutely carrying his offense, and he's going to get it done with a three-headed pitching monster in Shane McClanahan, Aaron Nola, and Corbin Burns carrying the way. And you know what? It could work. Like, we have seen teams sneak into the playoffs and go to the finals with a hell of a lot less. Looking at you in 2022, Nick, arguably even myself in the COVID season. Chow has the horses to get it done. It's just going to be whether the rest of the roster is so putridly bad that it drags him down. And so far, so good for him. Because he's 5-5, he's 10th, he's one win away, and a loss from someone else from sneaking into the playoffs. I wouldn't want to face him in round one. No freaking way. If I'm Ryan, if I'm, oh, I don't even know who's second at this point, I should check the updated standings, but if I'm Ryan or I'm like Garth Newton or Tillo, like I want no part of Jeffrey Chow in round one. And he's my dark horse. You know, he is calling halfway through the season. The guy's a dark horse to win the championship. And I've talked to him personally. He says, oh, I don't know how to rebuild. I'm too lazy to do research. Bro, you don't have to rebuild. Like, you need to make a couple of trades to fortify your offense, but you don't need to rebuild, my friend. Not at all. Not with this kind of performance. Keep it up. Well on the way. Moving on to our fourth matchup. The Illuminati was taking on the Seattle Monstars, and this matchup is pathetic. It is so sad. If I had a violin, I would play it right now. But the Illuminati got the win. 134.5 to 129.1. 2-8, still 20th. That's awesome. You get a win. You're second of the year, and you're so bad that you're still last place. And the Seattle Monstars dropping down to 4-6 in 12th place. And so my takeaways from this are twofold. One, Mike's team is super bad. It's exactly what we all think it is, right? Like Braxton Garrett, Brent Rooker, Orlando Arcia. That's a disgusting group of top scoring players, and that's how you get 134.5 points. There is not a lot there. We know where Mike's at. I'm not going to waste time breaking down his team for all of you when we all know he's playing for next year. But for stats, stats is, you know what? Stats is still what he was last year. He's a Europa team. You know, started off the season really strong. Ohtani and Vlad were carrying this team. We know that narrative at this point. But that's over now, right? Ohtani is not playing otherworldly. Vlad is nowhere to be seen. He is not in his top three scorers, who, by the way, were Ohtani, Kenley Jansen, and Trevor Richards. None of them putting up even 20 points. And I've been very open about this. When your relievers are your top scorers, you are in trouble. And that is the motto that I live by. And when two of your three top scorers are relievers, that's a big problem. Right? Kenley Jansen and Trevor Richards putting up basically 15 points apiece is not going to get it done, right? You look at the good teams, you look at the Ryans, you look at the Tillas of the world, you look at those guys. Relief pitchers are not part of the top three equation. I'm sorry, they're not. They are helpful, they matter, you need them, but they're not the top scoring players on your roster. They are supplementary pieces. They are, they're supplementary pieces that are meant to fill a need, and they are there to do a purpose and one thing, which is get innings and get strikeouts and saves and holds, but they're not the foundational pillars of your roster and your scoring results. At least they shouldn't be. And you know what? That's a trend you see with bad teams. And you know what? For all the crap we see about Ohtani, oh, where's he gonna sign? He's gonna get $500, $600 million. He hasn't been that good. Like, the Angels are not that good, and he is not that good. He is obviously a generational player. He is the most valuable player in fantasy when he's one player on your fantasy website. And he is obviously a marvel. But people are saying basically sign a blank check and let him fill in the number. I don't think you need to do that. I don't. I think his contract looks a lot more what Aaron Judge and Bryce Harper's contracts look like than some blank check of like $700 million for the next 10 years. I don't see it. I don't see it. And for Ian, his equation is simple. Ohtani and Vlad not only have to be his top scorers, they have to be top fantasy players. They have to be top 20 players, both of them, at the same time. And that's tough. I think with Vlad, especially, we know what he is at this point. He is a guy who is overrated. He is struggling right now. He can put up points, sure, but that doesn't mean that he's an MVP candidate. I don't think we're ever going to see 50 home runs from Vlad. I don't. I don't. Vlad's max in my brain needs to be recalculated, right? So everyone thinks, oh, he's on this potential. He was hitting really well during the pandemic. I mean, I've been open about this. He was hitting bombs at a AAA park. When it comes to the major leagues, when it comes to major league ballparks, Vlad's 100th percentile outcome probably looks more like 40 home runs and 100 RBI, which is still a great player, but it's not otherworldly. And I don't even know if Vlad is operating at his highs, which, by the way, he isn't and hasn't been for a while, is enough to combine with Ohtani to carry Ian's team with all the other holes it has. So we're gonna have to see because Ian is in this like smush of teams that are like 4-6, 5-5, 6-4, and the next half of the season could go either way for them. They could be vaulting into 6-7-8 in the playoffs, or they could be in Europa. And it's too early to call, obviously, only being halfway through a season. So we'll see. But I don't like Ian's team that much. I think he's a Europa team. That's how I see it. So, moving on. Our fifth matchup. Mr. Newton was able to dispatch of Graham. 180.3 to 154.0. Garth moves to 8-2. Holy cow, he is second in the league. And this was my question from earlier. Graham moves to 5-5 and is ninth. Okay, there's a lot to unpack here. First off, 180 points winning the matchup sucks. But hey, you know what? There's a lot of teams. We don't ask how, we just ask that it happens. And no one's going to look back on this and say, Newton, you only won with 180 points. So there's that, I guess. But Newton being 8-2, like, you will see this in the power rankings I released. He is the most shocking team this year. I don't think that's hyperbole, like, at all. If you had told me at the beginning of the year that he would be 8-2, I probably would have slapped you in the face. Because with Newton's team, nothing jumps off the page at you. Like, his top scorers, Zach Eflin, Jack Flaherty, Craig Kimbrel. When you think of those names, would you want them on your roster? Would you go pay a premium for any of those players? I wouldn't. And I own Jack Flaherty. And I did pay a premium for him. And if I had the chance to do it again, I wouldn't do it. And if any of you are wondering what I paid, it was Luis Castillo. Yeah. Worked out well. So that there's that. But Newton gets it done by committee. Like, if you look at all his players, he's getting standout performances. Like Max Muntu was carrying his team at the beginning of the year, but he's not now. And that's fine because he's got Ketel Marte and Christian Walker and Brian Bayo is pitching really well. And Zach Eflin is like, for some reason, a top 25 pitcher by points this year. And that's how he gets it done. It's just a new guy every week. Like, I bet you if we look at these top three scorers week over week over week, it's different guys all the time, save for like maybe Eflin over and over and over again. And that's cool. I mean, that's kind of how you get it done. Like, his formula has always worked for him. He targets a unique type of player that maybe other people in the league overlook. And every year, he throws together a record to get in the playoffs, and he makes noise. I'm not going to question him. I do think what he's doing is a bit of smoke and mirrors, in the same way that, Garth MacInnes is a bit of smoke and mirrors. I think it's similar to that, where you're kind of like, do I believe in this? Do I think it's sustainable over the next half of the season? But we're getting to the point, and if Garth was here, he would say this. We are at the point where 8-2 is so far ahead of everyone else. He could go 3-7, and he's rocking 11-9. He's probably still sneaking into the 8th seed. So his cushion is so big right now. He's so far up. I don't see him missing the playoffs. And obviously, it would be better for Newton if he could stay second, third, or fourth and get a weaker first round matchup. But I think he's in the playoff picture. I think he's going to be there come the end of the season. And I don't know what to make of him. Like I do every year, I write him off and then off he goes. So we've talked about him. He's been on, obviously, on the podcast a lot every week to defend his team and to say that, he's hopeful that he can get to the finals. I don't know if that's possible or if that's going to happen. But it's just remarkable to me with the consistency that he throws together every season of being an elite team, putting together a good record, getting the playoffs, and knocking off teams that you would think on paper are better than him. So I'm not gonna doubt him in terms of if he gets in, what he'll do. In the power rankings I've released, obviously I rank him a bit lower than the top tier just because I think, like I always do, that there's a bit of regression coming for him. But we will see. On the flip side of things, what a fall from grace for Graham. I believe he started off the season 5-1. Could be wrong in that. He's lost four in a row. This point total makes me sad. Randy Arozarena, his top point getter. Tyler Stevenson, second, and Brian De La Cruz, third. But it's the guys underneath him that aren't performing, right? So he has injuries. Justin Steele. I think Tony Gonsolin's only back recently. Trying to think of other guys he has injured, but I know he's battling injuries and he's battling regressing players. Andrés Giménez not having the season he had last year. Ian Happ taking a step backwards. Guys like that are just not putting up the points. Jorge Mateo, I believe, was on his roster for a long time, and he obviously regressed and was dropped. And so for Graham, it's kind of a reckoning, right? It's that regression coming for a lot of his players that I think a lot of us at the beginning of the year just assumed that's who they were, right? Like we assumed Andrés Giménez wasn't going to repeat last year. We assumed Ian Happ wasn't going to do what he did last year. And I think at the beginning of the season, they were kind of holding up their end of the bargain. Pablo Lopez was going off. He's come back down to earth. I think that's probably what's going on with Graham is that a lot of his star players are kind of regressing back to their true forms and their true means. And so he's struggling a bit with that. And, as someone who owns his first low minors pick, I'm for it. I'm all here for it. You want to keep losing? Better pick for me. Because I think ultimately where Graham's headed is probably the top half of Europa, and I think he has a strong chance to win it. Because I think he has a roster that's mid, but it's not bad. And it's got the potential to score 250 points. We've seen it. But I don't think it's a caliber required to get into the playoffs. I think there's just too much competition ahead of him. I think he's consistently put up crappy point totals. And the biggest limiter for Graham, and I hate to say this, is that he's not active enough. Like if my team was taking a step back week after week after week, I would make a trade. Like, hey, so and so, do you want to give me a pitcher? Like he has got prospects. He's got Jordan Lawler, for example. I don't have his minor leagues in front of me, but I know he has other guys that are coveted, like they're good prospects. So he can make a trade if he wants. He doesn't have to stand pat. And the problem with him, I think, whether it's his real life being busy or whatever, is that he hasn't done anything to address his roster. Like, he'll say he's looking for a guy in Slack, but then we don't hear anything. Well, I guess you got to do a bit more than that to get it going. So while I'm talking here, I am pulling up his minor leagues because I'm interested. So Brett Beatty is on his roster. Hasn't been great. He hasn't called him up, I don't believe. Esteury Ruiz has been sitting on the waiver wire like all season with a 2.0 points per game. I mean, that would be helpful. Yeah, I mean, looking at the system, like Jordan Lawler, Acuna, Bush, Cole Osprey, like Veen, those are guys that have value, man. Like, those are guys that you can flip in a package for a starting pitcher from a rebuilding team. You can get somebody from a Lim, a Flex, myself. I've made Bryce Elder available. If you don't like Bryce Elder, that's fine. Insert other pitcher here. Do something to make your roster better. Because at the moment, you're sinking. And unless he does something, I think he's bound for Europa. I think it's as simple as that. So let's move on to the next matchup. And in one of the more shocking results this week, I'm just kidding. It's the matchup, it's the upset special, as we used to call it. Penis, 216.5. Easily dispatches of the Midland Raccoons, 216.5 to 115.1. Penis is now 4-6 in 14th. The Raccoons dropped to 7-3, down in fifth. Oh boy, this is a shock. I'm not, obviously, this is a shock. Jesus Luzardo, Lane Thomas, Kodai Senga, the top scorers for Penis. Clayton Kershaw, Jorge Soler, Marcus Stroman for the Raccoons. Penis just had a good week. Like, this is the thing with fantasy baseball, man. Like, and it's the thing with real life baseball too. Crappy teams can jump up and bite you. They can go on a streak. Look at the Oakland A's, man. Hottest team in the American League, five in a row. They absolutely destroyed Zach Eflin last night. The Tampa Bay Rays, the top team in the American League. So that's what this is. Penis had his 100th percentile outcome week. He had his best week, probably of what's going to be the season. He got tons of good performances. His pitching was solid. Kodai Senga finally put together a good start. His bat actually came around. Varsho was solid. Like, this is what Lim would need to have happen every week if he wanted to be a consistent contender. On the flip side, I think the more puzzling thing for me is what happened to the Raccoons. I mean, I remember looking at their lineup midweek, and I don't even think that they set their lineup. So that's a big problem. Because I was looking and I was like, man, like, some of their starters are missing. This guy's not getting started. That guy's not getting started. What in dear God is going on? So that's an issue. And like, when you dive into the numbers a bit more, like, the Raccoons didn't even get seven starts. Like, I'm sorry, but you're a playoff team. You're 7-3. You're fifth place now, but you were second coming into the matchup. There's two of you, for God's sakes, and you can't get seven starts. Like, that is horrible management. And I wonder if they look back on this later on and go, man, we really wish we got that win. Like, maybe they finish fourth and they draw a really tough fifth seed matchup. And they go, damn, like, if we had won this matchup, we could have been second or third. We could have got a, somebody more beatable in the first round. That's the kind of thing where you're like, okay, what the heck is going on? And I think the other part of this is that, some of their guys are regressing a bit. Jared Kelnick coming back to earth. Bobby Witt still struggling. Current, he's been a bit better, still struggling. Seiya Suzuki, he's been hurt. Alex Verdugo, fuck that guy for talking shit to Alek Manoah, but he's also kind of been worse of late. So the Raccoons are dealing with some regression to their players. Again, another team I'd kind of be like, maybe you should make a move, right? Like, maybe you can trade somebody. I know they got some prospects. Tamar Johnson, amazing prospect in their system. Let's hop over and take a quick look at what else they got in the pipe. Chase Petty isn't too bad. Man, Heliot Ramos, that is a prospect that used to be highly regarded that is completely flopped. Weird how that works. Dalton Rushing, really good catcher for the Los Angeles Dodgers. Jackson Jobe as well. So they have some prospects. They have some ammunition to make a deal. And so I think if you're the Raccoons, like you look at this and go, okay, we need to be better managers and we need to make a move. We need to make sure we're getting seven starts every darn week. Eight or nine is preferable if they're solid, and we need to get some help, whether that's a center fielder, whether that's some closers, whether that's a starting pitcher, like whatever. Make a move, people, because your team is really good. You're probably going to make the playoffs. You don't want to be in, you don't want to be having any regret when it's all over. Okay, let us move on to our next matchup. That involves the Stubby Clop Coppers, and they won this week. 239.9 points, more than enough to dispatch of Ash's Money Ballers with 156.4 points. Garth McKinnon is 7-3, 6th place. Ash drops to 3-7 in 18th place. Blake Snell. Blake Snell every year, starts off like a bag of dog shit. Can't find the strike zone. Walks a million dudes, goes four innings, and you want to drop him. And then every year he flips on a switch and goes, oh yeah, I like pretty much won an American League Cy Young Award and can be a top 20 pitcher in baseball. So I think that's what I'll dress as for the rest of the year. And this week was no different. 45 points, two great starts. Jordan Montgomery and Jock Peterson round out the top scorers for the Clappers. Fernando Tatis, John Gray, and Dylan Cease for the Moneyballers. I would love to just say that this is a product of poor management by Ash. Maybe it is. You know, a quick look at it. Didn't get seven starts, but, like, he got six. But let's give our flowers, or let's give his flowers to Garth McInnes. Eight starts. He made matchup acquisitions. He came into Sunday and he put the hammer down. 75.6 points to 22.5 on the Sunday. He made sure he won the matchup. That was the difference. He streamed starters. Garth McInnes is all in this year. I don't know if we've ever seen Garth McInnes be all in before, but he's trying. Like, this is literally evidence that he is trying. He is getting more than seven starts. He's making matchup acquisitions on the fly as he sees fit. He's probably crapping his pants, realizing his team is actually potentially good, and he's going for it. And that is amazingly exciting for this league. Because if he won the title, like, remember last year how Nick took all those stupid photos and took the belt on vacation and did unspeakable things to the belt? If Garth McInnes won the title, you just wouldn't see the belt again. Like, you would just, you wouldn't see it. You wouldn't see a single photo. You wouldn't see a single thing. He would be the most redacted champ we've ever seen. He isn't redacted, but he would be the most redacted-like champ we have ever seen. And that's super exciting. Super exciting. Garth McInnes, if you listen to this podcast, which I highly doubt you do, but if you do, love to interview you. It would make up for all of Cam's failures in life if you just allowed me to interview you for the update of Better Known Owner. Please, 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 please. Please is also probably what Ash is saying. Please let the season end. Please take my team from me. Because, man, like, every year, it's the same story with this guy. Great roster, some injuries. Eloy Jimenez made a fucking glass. We get it. The managerial prowess is just not there. The effort is just not there. The results are just not there. If this was a real major league team, which obviously you could say that about a lot of things in this league, if it was a major league team, this and that, Ash would have been fired like 3 years ago. Like, no fucking joke. Would have been fired. So full credit to the Clappers. I'm super excited to see Garth try. I'm not surprised that Ash is just racking up W's. Looks like he's headed for the Vays. I don't remember if Ash has ever won the Vays, but if he has, he can get another one. If he hasn't, finally an achievement in this league. All right. I don't know what we call the third matchup from the end, because I'm not smart like Garth McInnes, but this is our third matchup from the end. And it involved the director, my boss, Aiden, taking on the Squirtle Squad. And Aiden won. 204.6 to 172.8. Aiden improves to 7-3, fourth place. The Squirtle Squad drops to 500, 5-5 at 11th. Remember that thing I said about relievers? Yeah, that's pretty much what happened here. I don't even think I'm going to say this name right. Josh Spores, Andreas Munoz, and Christian Yelich were the top scorers for the Squirtle Squad. Nolan Arenado, Kevin Gausman, and Isak Paredes for Aiden. 204 points is not amazing. It's nothing special, but it got the job done. Nolan Arenado finally coming through. This is what Aiden needs. He needs his older guys, Nolan Arenado, Kevin Gausman specifically, Joe Musgrove wouldn't hurt either, to do good, right? And so, look, Aiden's got a good team, right? Like, his pitching staff, I've been open about this for multiple weeks. He has one of the best pitching staffs in the league, no doubt. Behind maybe Ryan, no one better. Nate Eovaldi, Kevin Gausman, Joe Musgrove has been his worst pitcher. Nestor Cortez probably also been one of his worser pitchers. But when those guys are your like 6th and 7th starters, who gives a shit? Like, your team is amazing. Sad to see Liam Hendricks go back on the IL because he just got back. We're rooting for you, Liam. But it's the bats for me. Like, Aiden could easily be in the tier of Tillo, of Ryan, of Newton, if he just got some offensive help, because he's got some holes, man. Like, Jorge Polanco, not very good. Not very good. You also probably, like, despite this week's scoring period, don't want to be starting Isak Paredes on a regular basis. James Outman, yeah, he's looking like he needs some more time in the minors, or is probably just a quad A player. So you might want to upgrade on him as well. Mike Trout is definitely looking different than he used to. The batting average is down, doesn't steal bases, although he hasn't for a while. So you need a little bit more to supplement him. Like, if I'm Aiden, I'm looking for a first baseman, a second baseman, and an alt bat. And he's got some guys. He's got some ammunition, man. Like, Jackson Merrill, that's a good prospect. That can probably get you somebody. So if I'm Aiden, I mean, he's got Bobby Miller, too. Bobby Miller, too. So if I'm Aiden, I'm looking to package some prospects. I'm looking to package my picks. I'm looking to get a couple bats. They don't even have to be studly. Like, they don't have to be complete studs. They just have to be solid. They just have to be, you know, two-point per game guys. That's all he needs. Fill some holes, and Aiden will rise to the cream of the crop of this league. And on the flip side, the Squirtle Squad, man, every time I think that they're going to go on a run and they know what they're doing, like, this shit happens. And, you know, they messaged me, oh, is this Sunday start available? Is this or that? Yeah, they need more than some Sunday starts for the roster. Like, you guys probably need some starting pitching. Like, you and Aiden, if you put your teams together, would have an amazing team. Because Aiden's got sick pitching, and you guys have a decent enough offense to get through. But they need pitching. Lance Lynn sucks. Robbie Ray hurt. Martin Perez is Martin Perez. Like, he had a career season last year. He's not doing it again. They need pitching. They have lots of prospects. Lots of low minors guys. Lots of guys that are complete lotto tickets that if a rebuilding team is like, hey, you know what, I'll take like 3, 4, 5 of these guys. Here's my starting pitcher that can be like top 50, top 45. That's what they need to do. That's what they need to do. Because at the moment, their variance is all over the place, right? Like, they're dropping 172 one week, 240 the next. They're 5-5. That's pretty much the epitome of their season. Up, down, up, down, up, down. So we will see. We will see. But they have some work to do, I think, to get back into the playoff picture. All right, the penultimate matchup. Fourth quarter, Jimmy Butler taking on the Bash Bros. And what do you know? Jimmy Butler actually showed up in this matchup. 236.1 to RKR's 203.1. Jimmy Butler improves to 8-2, third place. The Bash Bros fall to 6-4 in seventh. Johan Oviedo, Mookie Betts, and Travis d'Arnaud lead the way for Jimmy Butler. Zach Neto, Taylor Ward, and Austin Riley lead the way for the Bash Bros. And if you heard me chuckle just then, it was because Taylor Ward actually did something on RKR's team after he completely shit the bed on Ryan's team, which is not surprising. He probably didn't want to play for Ryan. Ryan must be the most annoying fucking manager, just coming into the fantasy clubhouse being like, come on, guys, we need more wins. What the hell's going on? One guy on my roster who's not performing, I'm going to trade you. That must be really fucking annoying to deal with on a daily basis if I was playing in that clubhouse. So I can see why he is doing a lot better over with RKR, who's one of the more chill guys. On the flip side, for Tillo, Tillo's a well-oiled machine, right? Like, I'm gonna put it out there. This is like probably one of his worst weeks, right? Like, this is what Tillo looks like when things aren't going great. Guys like Johan Oviedo and Travis d'Arnaud were in your top scorers when Scherzer and Sale and insert other amazing pitchers he has here are not performing. And this to me is like proof that his team can get by without his pitchers going off. And that's a bad sign for the rest of the league. Because if this is like closer to his floor, his ceiling is like 280. And 280 is going to get the job done most weeks. So Tillo to me, I'm going to spoil a power ranking part right here. Tillo to me is the second best team in the league. And a performance like this, as kind of a drop off, certainly fuels that fire for me. On the flip side, I've been an RKR proponent all year. So Zach Nettle finally putting it together is good. Austin Riley probably needs to step it up, but like RKR's team is a weird one because Juan Soto has not been very good. He just got Tristan McKenzie back. Nick Lodolo and Grayson Rodriguez have not been good, but his team on paper should be better, right? Like O'Neill Cruz when he comes back next year, RKR is going to be a force. In the interim, like, here's my thing with RKR, and I'm biased here. I'm biased here. That's all I'm going to say. I would like to see him move his pitchers that are not helping him for pitchers that will, or for players that will. Like, Nick Lodolo, okay, maybe he's coming back, so that's fine. But Grayson Rodriguez is not doing you any good in the minors. And if you think he's going to get called up in a month, okay, fine. But if you don't, and you think, like, I just, the value is too much for me to trade away, I want to see what's there, like, you're in the playoffs, man. Like, it is time to get a move on. Trade that dead roster spot. Because not only is Grayson Rodriguez not helping you, he is taking up a roster spot that you could use for productivity elsewhere. So if you traded him for, say, a bat or a pitcher or whatever, your team would be exponentially better. And so I'd like to see him do that. But if that's not in the cards, he's probably still a fringe playoff team. I think he's probably still a 6, 7, 8 guy. But this is probably what his first round matchup looks like, right? He's probably facing a Tillo or a Ryan or a Newton, and this is probably what's going to happen. But if he somehow finishes like fifth or sixth and can jump on like a Chris in round one, then we could be talking a different story. But in the interim, this could be your future, RKR, if you're listening, if you leave your roster as is. And last word on this matchup that I will say is, both these teams make the playoffs coming into the season, in my mind. Last matchup. It involves the resident bragger of the league, Ryan Neeson and the Mad King. He took on the Husan Alliance. And Ryan is victorious, 292.6 to 240.1. I am not going to use this platform to actually address the matchup because we know Ryan is good. His top three scorers, Lucas Giolito, Trey Turner, and Ronald Acuna. Shane Bieber, Julio Teheran, and Zach Wheeler for the Husan Alliance. Okay, I lied. I'm going to talk about this matchup for a brief second. How the hell is Julio Teheran doing this? Do you guys remember Teheran U Apart, Ryan's original team name? Because if you weren't in the league or you forgot, no one is faulting you. Because it was like 7 years ago. Like, Julio Teheran was good in like 2016 when I first joined the league. Yeah. So I don't know how he's doing this because he doesn't strike anyone out. Plays for the Brewers, they're just like, fuck, give me a pitcher, a guy you can throw, period, at the MLB level, and I'll just deal with the rest. Dude's like 30, I think he's like 30 or 31, which just proves to you like how young he was when this was going on, when he was at his peak of his powers. But good story. Don't know how sustainable it is. Shocked it's even happening at all. But Daniel Murphy got signed to a minor league deal recently, so anything's possible. But I want to use this platform to talk about that trade we talked about last week. And Garth Newton's not here to argue and aggravate me, so that's better. Ryan made a move. Ryan's made two moves. But most recently, he acquired Julio Rodriguez and Julio Urias, and it cost him Shane McClanahan. And I don't still don't see why this trade can't be beneficial to both teams. Shane McClanahan was great for Chow this week. Julio Rodriguez, Julio Urias, they're going to be great for Ryan. Julio Rodriguez is arguably a top five dynasty asset. Or I say arguably because he could be first. He was first coming into the year. People were so high on him, they were selling their fucking house for him. Okay, so yeah. But behind Wander Franco, I don't really know if there's a player with as much helium as Julio Rodriguez, and for good reason, right? The kid is 21. The kid is going to be a center field cornerstone for the next decade. You don't pass up that opportunity to acquire him, almost irrespective of cost, let alone the fact that I give up a player who you hope becomes him and is not him, and a couple other prospects that are not as good. And yeah, he gave up Shane McClanahan, the best, arguably the best pitcher in baseball behind like Spencer Strider. And yeah, Shane McClanahan was really good this week. And yeah, he's awesome. But Julio Urias is probably 80% of what Shane McClanahan is on a weekly basis. And you get the best player, the best center fielder in baseball for guys who you hope become a good center fielder in baseball. Like, this to me is just a no-brainer, let alone the fact Ryan is a top team in this league by a wide margin, let alone by the fact that we would roast the shit out of him if he did not go for it every single week and for this season, and that is exactly what he did. So let's pull back the criticism on Ryan a bit. He is chartering some unnavigated waters for many of us in that his team is by far the best team in the league. He is expected to win a championship this year. If he does not win a championship, his season is a failure. I don't care if he gets to the finals and loses. It's a failure. So he is lining up his pins to do everything in his power to make sure that he can get to the finals. So let's commend that. Instead of roasting him and bashing him just because we don't necessarily agree on the direction he's taking, the man is trying to navigate a course to a championship. And in any sport, we sit there and we go, well, the underdog story, this and that, that's so tough. How about the team that just is expected to win? Because Ryan is expected to win here. Nothing else will suffice. And that is a shitload of pressure. I've never been in that scenario in this league. And I doubt many of us have either, because Ryan's been holding that mantle for years and years and years. So let's give a little respect. Let's agree to disagree potentially on the direction he's going, because I think it's great. Others may not. But let's all agree the man is doing exactly what he should be doing and deserves commendation for it. All right. Now, let us review the picks and review the matchup. So, last week was an interesting week. Garth and I actually both got five matchups correct, which is sad. So there was no movement in the overall gap between the two of us. I have 63 matchups correct out of 100. He has 55. We are both pathetic at flipping coins. We are horrible at picking. I'm not going to talk trash here because, again, I think Newton has lots and lots of time to make up the ground, and I'm going to look stupid if I talk too much trash. But this week we have a wide variance of picks, which means one of us could make up ground or pull away. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go through the picks that we have the same. So I will go through the picks we have the same, and then I will quickly discuss the matchups that we do not have the same. I'm not going to speak for Garth because I don't know why he's making certain picks, because I think he wants variance too, and I think you could go either way in a lot of these matchups because they're very close. So I'll just go over them quickly and try to give a bit of perspective. So we both have, starting off, we both have Flex over Nick, not super surprising, and so far that's looking pretty good. Flex is up 52.2 to 30.3. Yeah, we both have the Raccoons, who are taking on the Illuminati this week. No shocker, 54.9 to 1.6. That's looking pretty good. We both have the Squirtle Squad over Penis. That is looking pretty good, 57.2 to 21.6. And we both have RKR dispatching of ash, and so far that's looking pretty good, 27.7 to 12.6. So we agree on those matchups. Let us start with the variants. So the first matchup we have different, Garth taking on Garth. And you know what? Garth picked himself. I took Garth McGuinness. And so far, Newton's faith in himself is justified. 47 points to 33.4. Just to be super brief and full transparency, I actually took Newton as well, but I said, like, I literally have no lean on this. So I'll take whoever, mark me down for whoever he doesn't take. Because I really think both these teams are really good. And I have literally no idea who's going to win the matchup. You could literally tell me either team wins this matchup come the end of the week by like 50 points, 2 points, 100 points. And I'd be like, yep, okay, cool. So not a lot of way to lean either way here. And that's what happens when your second and sixth place teams take each other on, but they are 8-2 and 7-3 respectively. You flip a coin. So we will see who comes out of that. Hopefully Daddy Mac can make up some ground. In my matchup, I stuck with myself, see, confidence, and Newton took Chris. I'm currently up 57.6 to 29.3. Yeah, Chris, this is going to be a test for Chris. Like, Chris, if he's legit, should beat me. But I'm not sure he's going to be able to put up the 200 points needed to do so. So I took myself, Newton took Chris. Man, could go either way, but I think I got this one. Like, I think I could win this one. So hopefully that's a W for me. Ben taking on Graham. And Newton is Ben, and I have Graham, and Newton is slightly ahead at this point, 38.1 to 35.8. I saw Ben firsthand last week. I saw what his team is looking like these days. I just can't get behind that. Although Graham also looked completely terrible last week too. So maybe I should rethink my life choices. You know, Ben is 4-6. Graham's 5-5. In theory, Graham should win the matchup. But frick, if you swap their records, it's not much of a difference. So we will see. Ben's got the slight advantage at this point. Could go either way. Jameel and Aiden. So Newton has Aiden and I have Jameel. So far that is looking good for Newton because Aiden has 32.7 points and Jameel has 16.7. Yeah, I wanted to pick Aiden, figured we would have the same pick there. So I went with the variance pick of Jameel. Jameel put up 240 points last week against Ryan, which is more than Aiden put up in a winning effort. So I thought maybe Jameel could kind of carry it over this week. Hasn't been the case so far. We're going to have to see Kyle Schwarber leading the way for him right now. Mike Trout for Aiden. We will see. I think the odds are probably for Aiden at this point. Newton smart here taking the chalk. Don't want to sell out hope yet, but I'm losing faith in Jameel. So that will bring us to the last matchup. And this is the matchup of the week. The number one and number two teams, or sorry, number one and number three teams squaring off. Ryan Neeson and the Mad King taking on fourth quarter Jimmy Butler. Newton is on the Mad King. I am on Jimmy Butler. And I have been the Ryan Whisperer this season, basically calling both of his losses. But Ryan's up right now, 28.2 to 6.3. I don't know. My logic behind this was just, Neeson has dips in the season. It's just every team does. Not just Neeson, but every team does. You know, weeks where they're not as interested, or if you're Ashes every week, weeks where their players just don't perform. I kind of figured, well, you know, Tilla just had one of his worst weeks at 230. He's probably capable of 270, 280. Neeson just had about 290, but he's probably due for a letdown week. Tilla should be able to jump up and bite him. So far, it's not looking so good. And that's okay. That is okay. But you know what? Tilo can come back in this. I fully believe that. And I fully believe Tilo is a team to take down Ryan. In my opinion, Tilo is the second best team. So, you know, two beating one isn't that shocking. 8-2, both of them. So, you know what? We'll see. Newton's looking pretty good, actually, on a lot of his matchups. So, yeah, we will see. Just checking to make sure we didn't miss any matchups. I do not believe that we did. So That being said, the last thing I quickly wanted to chat about was the trade that went down this week, and that involved myself and RKR. Now, I said I wouldn't talk about this, but we're running a bit early, so I'll throw in my two cents super quick. I will not talk about the power ranking article. I'll save that for all of you till next week. But I traded Jesse Chavez to RKR along with Ryan's ninth round pick for our third round pick. Super simple trade here. RKR is looking for a relief pitcher. I'm looking for a pick upgrade, which, by the way, I'm willing to sell off any relief pitcher or anybody basically not tied down to my roster for picks. This is the kind of move RKR needs to make. He needs to get some help on his roster. He's got picks, he's got prospects. These are the kind of moves he needs to make. I'd love to see him add another starter. I'd love to see him add a shortstop to fill out O'Neill Cruz hole that hasn't been filled all season, and that is a 6'7" monstrous hole. Would love to see it. So, good move on his part. I get a pick upgrade. Everybody wins, right? What could go wrong here? I guess if the pick blows up next year, it could go wrong. And if Jesse Chavez is just Jesse Chavez, it could go wrong. But for now, if I was grading this, I'd give RKR a B. I'd give myself a B as well. So that takes care of everything this week. I want to thank everybody for listening to just my voice for the past 56 minutes and 13 seconds. Next week, we will go through the power rankings. Next week, Newton will return. Next week, I will not be doing this alone, one way or the other. But until next week rolls around, good night and good fantasy.